Yesterday, I talked with Larry Johnson, and we talked about this Israeli attack on Iran to respond what Iran did to Israel. We came to a conclusion that there was something so strange going on in this discussion, in this attack on Iran. First of all, Larry was pointing out that they said that 99% of the drones, missiles have been intercepted and they didn't do anything. All of a sudden, they were talking about that Iran wanted to attack the nuclear facility of Israel. This was so strange, pointing out. And the second part was this, the media, how the media was covering the story of Israeli attack on Iran. They were talking about it in a manner that it was a big deal, that they were attacking enormously on Iran. And today came out, Pepe Escobar wrote on his Twitter account. It says that the real story of the Israeli counter response. The Israeli initially chose to respond with extreme force. An F-35 loaded with a nuclear bomb was sent east over Jordan. The mission, what was the mission? Cause a high altitude detonation over Iran that would provoke a surge in the high capacity power lines, crippling Iran's electronic grid, as well as disabling all electronic devices. It seems that as the Israeli F-35 was leaving Jordanian airspace, it was shot down by the Russian Air Force. It's so strange, Ray, when it comes to this attack, Israeli attack. They said that it's going to be a big deal in CNN, all the Fox News, they were talking about this. And all of a sudden, we learned that there was nothing coming out of this attack. What's your take on this complexity, on this different issues, different views on this attack, on this Israeli attack on Iran?
Well, Nima, first I should say that I have great respect for my colleague, Larry Johnson, and my good friend, Pepe Escobar. They're both very principled, very experienced analysts of what's going on. Now, Larry addresses the lacuna here, the empty space between what Israel set out to do and what all the mainstream media was prepared to advertise 2 nights ago, and what actually happened. My God, what actually happened? Zero. There were some explosions near some Iranian city, Isfahan, Shiraz perhaps, but nothing of any consequence. And one is left wondering, as we all were, is this it? Is this Israel's retaliation for over 300 missiles, drones, ballistic missiles? It seemed really strange. And one explanation would be, well, how? It looks like maybe finally Israel listened to Joe Biden and took them seriously. And they said we won't support an offensive against Iran, and maybe this is it. This is the best they wanted to do. Well, that wasn't very satisfying either. So now we have this report from Pepe Escobar. Now I have to tell you again that Pepe is the best, okay? And he has sources that people lust after, okay? Now this particular source, and it appears to be just one source, and it doesn't appear to be Israeli or Iranian, or it could be Iranian, I suppose, that would be Asian, but it's one source, and it's quite explosive. Now, let's assume that Pepe is right, and that the Israelis loaded a nuclear bomb to have an EMP attack on Iran to dismember all their electrical facilities, and they were shot down by a Russian missile. Well, we're going to know more about that in the days ahead. I mean, it's certain that this kind of thing can't happen without us knowing about one way or another. Okay, so I think we have to postpone judgment on this The more so since it is so strange, so explosive in both senses of the word, and it's based on one source. So, as much as I admire Pepe Escobar, I think we have to wait and see. On the other hand, as you know, I am in touch with very, very serious military analysts, and I have one telling me just an hour ago, forget about it. Escobar is seldom wrong, but he's wrong on this one. So, in addition to all that, we have all kinds of smoke and mirrors. We have the possibility of Mossad or other intelligence services closer to home, throwing dust in everyone's eyes. So, the possibilities are very widespread, very immense. And so we have to sort of wait and see. But, if it turns out that this is true, my God, that has to be brought to the United Nations Security Council right away, okay? This is crazy. A nuclear attack on Iran. And, I wouldn't rule it out. So I hate to be wishy-washy, as you know, but the jury is out on this one. I have to rely as much on my special sources who know a lot about these things and who have appeared on your show as I do on Pepe and others like Larry, who have put it together in a very interesting way. In other words, this would explain frivolity of the so-called Israeli retaliation for over 300 missiles, drones, and ballistic missiles. So, whether that's the explanation or not, we have to wait and see. But it's a really step up in everyone should realize this is a very explosive. And would I put it past the Israelis? I would not. Would the Israelis ask for permission from the United States to do this? They would not. They're really great about asking for forgiveness after they do this kind of thing. They don't ask for permission beforehand. They didn't ask for permission to try to sink the USS Liberty back in June of 1967. They tried their damnedest to do it, and we covered that up. So, long story short, we have to wait and see. Sorry, I can't be more definitive on this. I really don't know which way to come down on this one.
Here comes the question, Ray. When you see this Iranian attack on Israel, this is a very big deal in my opinion, because this is the first time Iran is attacking Israel directly. And how the Iranian were convinced to attack Israel directly, in your opinion?
Well, it seems pretty clear that the Iranians told everybody and their brother and their sister and their cousin that they're going to do it. And 72 hours of advance notice? That's unusual. And then when they launched the drones didn't get there till 3 hours later. So it was a setup. Not only were the Israeli defenses on high alert, but the Americans, the British, the French, even the Saudis, for God's sake, were ready to do their part in defending Israeli territory. Now, what happened? Well, the Israelis and these friends, they're not really allies, but they're friends, they shot down, they say, 99% of them. Now, I think that's at least slightly exaggerated. It might be 80%, though. But that's pretty big, okay? So they did that, but what did they miss? They missed some very sophisticated ballistic missiles that actually, one of them you can see descending down into that Israeli airfield, and the interceptor goes up, and the missile goes takes a little maneuver and goes straight down, okay? So they got the airfield. At least five missiles got the airfield. And they also got that intelligence thing up on the Golan Heights. And they also got a place in Jerusalem, which is also an intelligence thing. So, what were the Iranians trying to do? The Iranians are trying to do, without provoking an overreaction from Israel, trying to tell them, look, we'll even tell you when we're coming, okay? You could get all your anti-aircraft and your anti-ballistic missile stuff already. We're still going to get through. Now, the initial information suggested that the Iranians said, look, we know where Dimona, we know where you produce those nuclear weapons, okay? We're not going to hit that, okay? We're not going to. So rest assured, we're not going to hit that, okay? And they didn't. That airfield that they had, not too far away, I think, what, 40, 50 kilometers, but it's away, okay, from Dimona. So this later story that the Israelis came up with, oh, they were targeting Dimona, well, that's suspicious too, because if the Israelis wanted to attack the Iranian nuclear facilities, the best thing they would do is say, well, they tried to attack ours first. So now we're in a bind here, but it was very, very, very unusual how this thing went down. To sum up, the Iranians took great care to warn everyone, including the United States. There are secret contacts by which they can do that. And they allowed the Israelis to shoot down with their very sophisticated anti-missile structure. Well, the Israelis are said to have spent $1.3 billion shooting down these drones that I think last count it cost maybe $10,000 or $20,000 to build. So, they did it. And of course, let's not forget that Biden himself told the Israeli leaders, congratulations, 99% is terrific. You won. Take the win. In other words, don't escalate. Don't retaliate in such a way that the escalation is unavoidable. We don't want a wider war. That's what Biden was saying. Now, the Israelis characteristically would just thumb their nose at what Biden says and do what they want anyway. So there's an argument for them having launched F-35 with a nuclear weapon. I still would need confirmation of that. It's a really explosive story. If I were to guess about it now, I'd say probably it's not true. That maybe Pepe Escobar's source thought it was true, but that we'll have to see. Pending that, I think we can say, well, we're skeptical. At least I am.
These tensions all started at that day that the Israelis attacked Iranian consulate in Syria. And was the Netanyahu administration trying to convince the United States to bring in the United States into the conflict? This was the main reason of this attack. Or they wanted to distract everybody from what's going on in Gaza. What was the main goal of the Netanyahu administration, in your opinion?
Well, the correct word for what's going on in Gaza right now, of course, is plausible genocide, according to the International Court of Justice. So let's not fudge around that. It can be a both end, Nima. In other words, there is advantage in distracting what's going on in Gaza, in southern Gaza around Rafah right now. Although, in my view, the Israeli military has taken a bloody defeat in Gaza and are back in Israel now reconstituting their forces. I think it's mostly what you said first, namely, the Israelis really wanted to get the US in with both feet. Okay. Now it's very clear that that's what Israel wants all along. I mean, they're not satisfied with U.S. enabling, my God, it's hard for me to say that U.S. enabling genocide, arming the country, giving that country political support to do genocide. Well, apparently Israelis want more. They want the U.S. to come in and finish off Iran once and for all. So yeah, that was the primary thing. And just parenthetically, I would note that April 1st, when the attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus was perpetrated, that's April Fool's Day, all right? Now I say that because I think the Israelis were very foolish to do that, because they were operating out of this old paradigm that they with their preponderance of military strength and U.S. backing, could not expect Iran to react the way it actually did just 2 weeks later. Okay, they were wrong. Iran attacked them directly for the first time ever. Would they do it again? Of course they would do it again. So it was a symbolic act. There's a message that the Iranians were sending. Look, we don't have a nuclear weapon. We don't need a nuclear weapon. We have all kinds of ballistic missiles and other missiles that can go like this and this, and watch us, watch us. So I think it was an April Fool's foolish thing to do on the 1st of April. And I think the general idea was to get the Iranians to do something out of character, namely something rash. And instead of that, they chose something which I think has to be described as something very clever, doing just enough not to escalate beyond repair, but enough to warn the Israelis, the game is over. If you think that you are immune for a direct attack from us, that was then, now is now. And we don't care about the US. If the US wants to support you, which they say they don't now, well, that's another thing. We're going to make sure that we retaliate in such a way that you will understand that we have the capability.
If the Netanyahu administration wanted to bring in the United States, can we say that this Iranian attack on Israel was totally disappointing for the Netanyahu administration because they didn't get what they wanted to get?
The Iranians did was to show very cleverly that they could retaliate in a meaningful way without getting the United States involved. Matter of fact, worst of all, the United States and Biden himself said, well, that's it. You take the win, take the 99%, and don't retaliate in such a way, because if you do, then we're not with you. We're not going to support any offensive strike on Iran. And then, even after the Israelis did that very anemic retaliation strike, U.S. spokespeople kept saying, "We said we have no intention to support offensive operations by Israel." So, yeah, I think Israel lost this one, and that's not necessarily a good thing, because that makes them even more desperate. And I think that Netanyahu, who in 2001, now let's see, that's 2024, what's that, 20, 23 years ago? Okay. He said very confidently, when he thought the microphone was off, oh, the US, the Americans, they can easily be moved in the direction we want. I mean, 80%, would you believe 80% of the Americans support us? It's absurd. End quote. Now, that's how he looked at it back then. I think he's so conditioned to think that when push comes to shove, with the Israel lobby so strong in our country, and with the Speaker of the House, a Christian Zionist, for God's sake. I mean, maybe I'll say that, in justifying more money, he said, well, it's a biblical, what do you call it, a mandate, or what I have written down here, a biblical admonition. For us believers, it is a biblical admonition to stand with Israel. My God, we used to. Well, some still criticize the regime in Tehran as being a clerical, religious, fanatical regime. My God. And here we have the Speaker of the House that just put all this stuff to a vote successfully in terms of 60 billion more for Ukraine and what, 26 or so billion more for Israel. He thinks that God told him to do this because, it's a mandate. And it's a not a mandate, but an admonition. And he doesn't realize, just in passing, I'll just say, biblical scholarship has shown that those kinds of admonitions went back to the early books of the Bible. Believe it or not, Genesis was one of the most recent books after the Babylonian captivity. And what Genesis was saying, no, that's that divine inspired violence is not the way to go. What we do now is we listen for Abel's blood to cry out to us. And what we do is we don't persecute others. We what was the Abel, well, Cain, we don't do what Cain did. Abel's blood cries out to us, and yeah, we're supposed to be treat our fellow person as a neighbor and not kill them. I mean, that's pretty clear. So all I'm saying here is that Mike Johnson, as devout as he may be, and I'm not casting any aspersions on his faith, that if he's basing it on the Bible, the Hebrew Bible, which I've studied and which I've had some really good courses in, he's misled in thinking that divine inspired violence is the way to go, because he's thinking about the Babylonian captivity, not after that, when Yahweh was telling Jews and future Christians, look, Abel's blood cries out. We are to be our brother's keeper, not our brother's killer.
Ray, the other thing that comes to this attack on Iran, in this Iranian attack on Israel, was this the participation of Jordan and with the United States, United Kingdom, and France in order to defend Israel. When it comes to Jordan, when it comes to Saudi Arabia and UAE, it seems that they have provided intelligence to the United States. How do you see these Arab states?
Well, the Arab leaders who lean toward the West and get all kinds of economic, military, and other support from the West have shown themselves to be, well, cowardly is not too strong a word. After all, Palestinians have been dealt a bad deal ever since 1948. There are millions of Palestinians spread out in diaspora in Syria and Lebanon and Egypt, even in Saudi Arabia. And one would think that they would have some impact on the decisions of these leaders. Well, these leaders are so corrupt and so much feeding at the trough of U.S. aid that they have betrayed the Palestinians. Just a matter of time before their populace rises up and says, look, we're not going to take any more of this. It's likely to be pretty bloody, I think. And it's just a matter of time before Israel finds out that it cannot prevail in Gaza, even if it tries to complete the genocide. I mean, after all, there are 1.4 million people in Rafah, the southern part of Gaza. They could exterminate them. And if we let them, they will. Okay, well, what will that do? Well, I think the rest of the Palestinians spread around, millions of them, will have their say at that point. And maybe even the Egyptian government and the Saudis and Jordan's king and the others will, of course, Hezbollah is part of the picture here. Hezbollah will not stand for this. And Hezbollah beat Israel last time they went to war against each other. So it's going to be pretty bloody unless people come to their senses. There's no unifying factor. There's no major power that wants to tamp this thing down. The closest thing you come to it is the alliance now between Russia and China, with Iran folded into that alliance under the BRICS. Okay, they're a member of BRICS now. And indeed, there was a treaty, a 20-year treaty, to renew an old treaty between Iran and Russia. Okay, it's been drafted, it's ready for signature. Now, the way it's been described to me is that it's almost a defense treaty. Now, I wouldn't expect the Russians to sign on to that just now, but it's in the works, and it shows the degree to which the Iranians have turned their their trust and their attitude toward Russia and away from Europe and the rest of the world, which has treated them so poorly. In a word, you have a tectonic shift, okay? You have the what I call the lily white West. Look at NATO. All those nations are white, okay? The lily white West against the rest of the world, okay? China, Russia, Indonesia, Brazil, Argentina, South Africa. I mean, that's a hell of a division, and it's a racist one. And when you think of what could come out of that, it really scares the hell out of me. But that's where it stands. Now, luckily, in my view, you have very reasonable, discreet people in charge in Beijing and in Moscow. They're content to just keep their powder dry, unwilling to let the West encroach even more on their borders, as in Ukraine, as in Taiwan. But they're together now in a way they've never been together before. And this, after all, is something that everyone who knows what's going on, including Brzezinski himself, said this is the worst thing that could happen to the United States, driving China and Russia together. That's the new reality. And it's just going to take a little while longer before the US realizes that not only are they no longer indispensable, they are no longer exceptional. As a matter of fact, they're less in power when you put Russia and China together, which they are together now. If there's a dust up, let's say there's a dust up between NATO and Russia, God forbid, in Europe. Well, look to the South China Sea, look to the Taiwan Straits. There's going to be saber rattling and more out that way. And when, Biden's asked, well, can he really contemplate a two-front war? Well, I just say that a one-front war in Ukraine is not going real well. Two-front war, that's not going to work either. And when you crank in the Middle East, or what we call Southwest Asia now, there's a trifecta that even the most adroit politicians could not handle. And lamentably, Biden has no adroit politicians supporting or advising him.
Whenever we talk about Netanyahu and his administration, people always referring to Netanyahu as a smart man. If he's smart, with what we've seen in the last 6 months, this attack on Gaza, total failure on the part of Israelis. Right now, these new escalations between Iran and Israel, for the first time, Iran is attacking Israel directly. The red line is gone. How we can call this guy smart? He did everything that the worst enemy of Israel would wish for.
Well, Nima, in my view, he's not smart, okay? He's clever, clever. Now, not in the British sense. A clever person in the British sense is a very smart, perspicacious guy. Now, in the American sense, clever just means willing to manipulate the levers, okay? Manipulate, in this case, not the levers, but the Americans, okay? So it's as much a case as naivete or the power of the Israel lobby that enables him to do that. And right now, even though the lobby is still strong enough to get 26 billion more today from Congress to support Israel, Biden and others are losing the support of young people who just can't abide the notion that our country is supporting genocide. So smart, I don't think you could call Netanyahu smart. He's clever, and he has to be really clever now, because if he loses power, he goes to jail. He and his wife, they have the bridal suite in one of these prisons in Tel Aviv. They've been corrupt as could be. They're not going to be able to escape that. So he's got to be really, really clever. And if he were smart, he wouldn't have done what he's done now. And now he's in a bind, and that's what makes this thing so precarious, so what the Germans call labile, so delicate, because they do have nuclear weapons. That's their only ace in the deck. And how could they use them? Well, one possibility is what Pepe Escobar has talked about today. My God, if it comes to that, we're all in deep trouble because the Iranians can retaliate, not with nuclear weapons. Again, they don't need nuclear weapons. Now, in addition to what Larry pointed out, namely that the Israelis all of a sudden changed their tune and said, oh, the Iranians tried to hit Dimona. The Israelis were complaining about Iran's nuclear weapons capability. Now, they were complaining so loudly that the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, a guy named Grassi, who never says anything much, felt the need to spell out what the situation was. And he said, look, we have inspectors in every nook and cranny of those Iranian nuclear establishment. They are not working on a nuclear weapon. I can assure you of that. Whoa! Now, as a codicil here, it was in 2007 that the U.S. intelligence community decided unanimously and with high confidence that Iran had stopped working on a nuclear weapon in 2002 and had not resumed work on that. That has been affirmed every year since, to include early this year by the intelligence community. So, why would the Israelis be raising this false flag? Well, that worries me because it's not true. Now, one little extra footnote here is that just 2 days ago, a major general who has a lot to do with Iran's uranium program has said, you know, we're not building a nuclear weapon. That's our policy. But maybe we should take another look at that, you know? Maybe we should take another look at that. Now, luckily, it's not up to him, it's up to the Ayatollahs, okay? And there's a fatwa against that. People say, ah, fatwa, what's a fatwa? Well, it's pretty serious in Islam. So hopefully, the Iranians will see, as they do now, no need to take that bait. They've got the kind of sophisticated missilery that can do the job, can do any job, and they proved that on the evening of the 14th of April.
We know that Israel has spent more than $1.2 billion in one night to defend itself against these Iranian drones and missiles. And $25 billion or $30 billion is nothing when it comes to these type of interactions, these type of attacks. And do they really understand that they need a permanent plan for peace in that region instead of sending more aids and more aids and more weapons? That would change nothing on when it comes to these type of attacks, when it comes to these type of tensions. That would bring enormous wars in that region, that would set the region on fire.
Nima, I hate to say this, but it's not the politicians that are making the decisions. It's the people who build the weapons, the people who sell the weapons, the people who profiteer on the weapons. Not you and not I and not the ordinary citizen, but the 1% that runs these defense industrial complexes. It's very, very clear that that's what's going on. Now, how would I show that? Well, if further proof were needed, we had the President of the United States acting as a marketeer. He's marketing the fact that U.S. weaponry will be built in the United States, no matter where it ends up. It'll be filling the pockets of U.S. citizens. Now, he wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. And, you know, when you think of, just take a step back and you think of what Pope Francis said to Yeah, it was a joint session of Congress back in 2015. I remember it well. He said the main problem in the world is the blood-soaked arms traders. They all got up and clapped, of course, giving hypocrisy a bad name. Okay. Now, Joe Biden's a Catholic. I mean, he doesn't have to do everything the Pope says, but at least listen to them. Okay. Now, instead of that, to get this aid, not only to Israel, but to Ukraine through the House of Representatives, so it can be melded with a Senate bill and they can get it passed and get all this money. I was going to say to Ukraine and Israel, but no. Listen to this. Here's what the title of this op-ed by Joe Biden 2 days ago was, Moment of Truth on Ukraine and Israel. Oh, wow. Let's read on here. Well, it doesn't last very long, this moment of truth. Here's the next thing he says. The Ukrainians are about to win. They've given the Russian Navy a tough time in the Black Sea. They've developed innovative weapons, especially drones, to counter Russian forces. There is a fighting force in Ukraine with the will and the skill to win. Nice phraseology, huh? The will and the skill, a bald-faced lie. They're not going to will. They're not going to win, okay? And that's because it's too late. The Russians have the capability now to defeat them in a very definitive way. Well, he does say something true, this Biden, in this op-ed. This is a true, this is a political, a pivotal moment, okay? Now, it is a pivotal moment, but it's not strategic. It's political in the United States, because neither the Republican nor the Democrats can win any election without the support of the Israel lobby and the military industrial complex. And never before have I seen it exposed so graphically. 2 or 3 months ago, or is even longer, when the Senate debated this big package of aid to Ukraine and Israel, every one of those senators except one said, look, don't be deceived. This money stays right here in the United States. It funds our industrial military industrial complex. And you know, everyone will profit from this. We'll have profits, we'll have new jobs and everything. Everyone except Chris von Holland from Maryland. I watched that whole debacle. It was really stomach churning, because there was the military industrial complex laid bare for all to see. Well, look what this is what President Biden went on to say. And I'll just put one more paragraph from this op-ed. If Congress passes military aid for Ukraine and Israel, which it just did 1 hour ago, here it is, Saturday, the 20th of April, we'll send military equipment from our own stockpiles. Then we'll use the money authorized by Congress to replenish those stockpiles by buying from American suppliers. That includes Patriot missiles made in Arkansas or Arizona, Javelin missiles made in Alabama, artillery shells made in Pennsylvania and Ohio and Texas. We'll be investing in America's industrial base, buying American products made in America by American workers, supporting jobs in nearly 40 states, and strengthening our national security. We'll help our friends while helping ourselves. I mean, can it be clearer? And so, what happened? Well, the Republicans don't want to be accused of being lesser in support of Israel or in Ukraine. The Republicans don't want to be accused of losing the war in Ukraine, which is already lost. And so, the Republicans want to be able to win elections. And they can't win elections without money from the military industrial complex here and from the Israel lobby here. And so you have those votes in Congress. How do they impinge on simple folk like us? Well, our teachers don't get paid. Our firefighters don't get paid. Our bridges fall apart. Our infrastructure is antiquated. Those kinds of things, while others, the 1%, profiteer. So, I hate to sound like a Marxist, for God's sake, but it is the ruling classes that are determining where they spend all our tax money. And it's a flammable situation in Ukraine, because they're going to have to face up to the fact that all is lost in Ukraine from Ukrainian and NATO point of view before the election. Putin has that option, okay? That's why he's giving one last overture. Look, you want a deal now, or do you want unconditional surrender before the election? That's going to play out in a very obnoxious way for the United States. And then, of course, with Bibi Netanyahu and his coterie of right-wing friends doing genocide in Gaza, well, that's not, that's, as the Chinese like to say, that's going to come to a no good end, no matter how it ends, okay? And Netanyahu may, if he loses power, end up in jail with his wife in that bridal suite that I talked about before. And so everything is very volatile. Meanwhile, you have the Chinese out there who are really saying, look, this is amazing what's going on here in Southwest Asia and Ukraine. But rest assured, Mr. Putin, we're with you. And we're with you in a very ostentatious way. And we will welcome you, Mr. Putin, in just another month or two to pick up where we left off right before we decided to go into Ukraine, for which you gave us first tacit support and then actually very clear support. It's support that we covet and that we're very grateful for. The tectonic shift has occurred. We hope that the Americans and their lackeys, the UK and those in Western Europe, those lily white folks, I hope they come around to figure it out before worse happens.